generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystal Lynn.
Good morning, Coastside. Ruben is not here. He is away doing fun things. So, Ruben, if you're listening from afar, we hope you're having tons of fun. I'm Crystal Lynn, and if you want to call in today, we have really cool guest here today, Betsy, who runs Home Helpers, and we're going to talk about senior care and what all goes into that. And if you want to call in, 650-477-1244. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for coming. I'm just going to kind of dive into it because I think this is a really interesting topic that a lot of people kind of think about but don't necessarily know about or know where to find the information. So you run Home Helpers, which is here in town, yes, which I think is really cool.
Thank you.
And so what is, like, senior care? What is it that Home Helpers does?
Okay. Really, really great question. And again, thank you so much for having me this morning. So senior care is basically non-medical care for families who are looking to bridge the gap when a family member is sick, as a family member gets older. Our agency, what we provide, are caregivers. And so people think like, oh, it's just a companion coming in, or it's somebody that is providing day-to-day support. And it is, but I think it's a broader subject. And to your earlier point, people don't really think about this until they need it. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, by the time you need it, you really, really need it. And so it becomes one of those things that can be an incredibly overwhelming topic. Everyone I know has said, oh, I've taken care of my mom, I've taken care of my grandma, I've taken care of my aunt. But it's not until that burnout starts happening, or the capacity to do your job, take care of your kids, take care of your loved one, until that becomes too much, it just sort of becomes this like abstract conversation. And so hopefully we can unpack that a little bit today.
Yes, absolutely. I love it. And if anybody wants to commiserate on this subject, please, again, feel free to call in 650-477-1244. And I like what you said, is that, and this is something you've said to me before, and it really stuck with me, is that sometimes when kids take over the care of their parent, which I think, you know, us in our 40s, we know a lot of people who are reaching that stage where they need to start considering taking care of their parents, or in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And, but then they lose the ability to be their parents' kid. They are now the caregiver.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that a lot of people will start to feel the burnout, and then that's when they call you, and then it's kind of like a, you know, pants on fire situation.
Yeah.
What is it, it's like, if, you know, wishes were gumdrops and you could make the ideal scenario, like, when would people be considering talking to Home Helpers and trying to figure out when somebody needs care?
That is such a great question. I wish more people asked that question, honestly. I don't have a really good answer for that. I think my approach, because I took care of my father, so my father had Alzheimer's. When I was 35, I ended up moving home to help my parents, mostly because my mother was in complete denial. He still only had an early onset dementia diagnosis at that point. We hadn't had the conversation about Alzheimer's or what the future was going to look like. And I think I just knew innately something was off and my mom was not okay. And in turn, because my mother was in denial, my father was not okay. So when we talk about this sandwich generation, we're talking about people who are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who have aging parents, but they also have kids at home. I was lucky. I did not have a child at home at 35. But what did happen in my situation is because I went home to take care of my parents, then I didn't get married and I didn't have kids because that became my second full-time job. And financially, I have been supporting them. I supported, you know, different parts of the process. My story is a little bit different, and not to just jump right into my story, but just to put things in perspective for people, because my story is not unique. And I think that's the piece that I want other people to understand is, like, it does happen to most of us that we end up in this position. And so when I look back at that, my parents lived in an area where there wasn't a lot of resources available. Half Moon Bay, San Mateo County, we are so lucky with the resources that we have here. But my parents didn't have that. They lived in Pennsylvania. And so for me, like, it was just this constant learning on the fly. What is available? What resources? In Half Moon Bay, we've got Senior Co-Siders. They're fantastic with all the resources that they have. If you have an aging parent, like, get in touch with them. Learn about the classes. Learn about the resources that are available. Where I lived, we didn't have it. Co-Side Day, Adult Day Health, is an incredible program. I had to drive my father at the end 25 miles to get him to an adult day program. And I do think that that prolonged his life. And I think it gave him purpose and a place to go. And that's the piece that you just don't know until you're in it. Nobody thinks about, like, oh, we put our kids in daycare, but we don't think about putting our adult parents an adult day program. And the programming is designed specifically to keep people engaged, to help them age with dignity, to help them connect with other people, to make new friends, because loneliness is such a huge part of mental decline as we get older. And so, you know, I've totally forgotten your question. I'm a terrible interviewee, but when do you start having this conversation? I think it's just having awareness. And part of my approach owning Home Helpers of San Mateo County is being that resource for people, being that open conversation and just sharing my experience. Because I think if you can put yourself in the shoes of somebody else, it becomes less abstract and it becomes an easier conversation to have.
One of the things that I admired most about my grandparents on my mom's side was they ended up having to take care of my grandmother's mother, my Nana. Mm-hmm. And Nana was going down the route of dementia, and Nana was very steadfast that she was staying home.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, her, and I'm going to apologize to our lovely fans out there if you feel the same way, but I will say from the family point of view, this was really difficult. Nana did not want to, like, leave home or have help or anything until her dementia was bad enough that she forgot that she didn't want those things is when they were finally able to bring in support. And then finally she did get to a point where she had to move to a healthcare facility. But it made it so hard on my grandparents, mm-hmm. because they were the only ones that she would let in to help take care of her, that after she passed, they had vowed to their four children that they were not going to be that to them. So they got very on board of, you know, when XYZ comes to pass, like, we are ready to, you know, we'll move into a home, a smaller home if we need to, or whatever. Like, they were prepared, and they had these conversations with my siblings. And another thing that they did in preparation for inevitably, and they had these conversations, I think, when they were in their early 70s. And none of this came to pass until they were well into their 80s. Mm-hmm. So everybody was really aware, and they gave each child a agency over the part of their life that they thought that child would do well in. So my mom was their medical executor because they felt like she's going to be able to tow lines that need to get towed. My auntie was the one that they brought in when they did need help at home. Mm-hmm. Because she had a lifestyle that allowed for that, and she is nurturing just in her nature, and so on and so forth with my uncles. Like, everybody had a job, and they knew what their job was, and it was all laid out very early on, which I think was so helpful because there was no bickering, there was no questions. And when my grandpa started to go down his road of dementia, they caught it very early on because the second time he lost track of driving to work, he had a part-time job at a museum. He started to get concerned that this was the first signs. I kid you not. They got that early diagnosis and he sold his car the next day, put his car up. They sold tools, anything he would no longer be able to use and potentially hurt himself on. Mm-hmm. Like, the process began and all the ducks started getting lined up. And again, it just made the process so much easier.
So what you're just describing is not the norm.
Yes, I know.
That is like the 1%. This is the perfect scenario, because in reality, and I love that. Like, I really, truly love that. I wish there was more early diagnoses. I see so many families that are like, I can't even get a diagnosis. Is he forgetful? But his long-term memory is so fantastic. Mm-hmm. My dad's long-term memory was fantastic. He could tell you stories of his childhood. Could he tell you what he had for lunch the day before? Absolutely not. Could he tell you where his clothes are? Absolutely
not. Yeah, my grandpa never forgot who his kids were.
Yeah. My dad did. He forgot my mom once. That was very traumatic.
Yeah,
he never forgot who I was. But I was also, you know, at the end of his life, I was the person that he was going to, because the other side is the emotional side of caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom kept saying, like, he's going to get better. He's going to go out on the porch and we're going to have one more summer together. And, you know, we're going to do all these things. And bless my mom. And we've talked about this, so I'm not airing dirty laundry here. But, you know, she really, for a long time, she didn't get it. She was 5 years younger than my dad. And she would say, she's like, I just thought your father was pulling my leg. I thought he had more energy. I didn't get what this was like to be in your 80s and feel this way and feel tired and only have a limited amount of energy. And so I, you know, again, as the child watching my parents have this disconnect, I mean, it was very clear to me what was going on. And I remember getting the Alzheimer's diagnosis, and we had done everything to try and get this. And so when the doctor said it, I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Problem solved. Like, next problem. Like we're going to take the next problem. We're going to run with it. We're going to find the solutions. And my mom and dad were shell-shocked. And I was so okay with it. Looking back on this now, I think it says a lot about me as, like, a caregiver. I got the diagnosis. I just blasted my siblings. I was like, hey, dad's got Alzheimer's. Like, that's it. I don't think I softened the blow at all. And both my sisters and my brother, like, immediately called. They were crying. They were like, oh, my God, what do you mean? And it was just, like,
emotional.
It's emotional. But also I was like, but we've talked about this. Like, we all wanted it until we didn't. I just was the one that was like, yeah, let's run with it and make it as easy as possible for him.
And you're a really good problem solver. So I think that's, like, the problem solver mentality is, like, mm-hmm. we've got the diagnosis. There are things we now need to implement and need to do. And I think that's what makes you such a great advocate for the senior that is potentially, like, the family and the senior who are potentially seeking care.
Yeah.
Is, like you were saying, that you can relate, but I think also your brain works very good in this problem-solving capacity.
Well, and I think it speaks, too, to being part of this generation. Like, I'm Gen X, so I'm the bottom of Gen X. But I still have that mentality of, like, okay, we've got a problem, we're going to solve it. Like, it's not very emotional. But what I do see with families and why I love working with families, not just with my seniors, is that there is a moment where, like, a child just wants to be the child. Like, it doesn't matter if your parents are 80 or your parents are in their 70s or even in the 60s. And some of my favorite clients, I will be completely honest, like, in their 90s, like, the silent generation is just built differently. Like, I am in such awe at their resolution and their ability to talk about things and the stories they can share. And like you're saying, like, they want to age at home, they want to be there, but, you know, the difference between staying home and being in a facility is 12 hours a week with a caregiver mm-hmm. to make sure that they're getting their meals prepped, to make sure that they're showering and clean. Like, you don't have to shower every day when you get older, but there's so many families that come in and it's like, well, my dad showered every day. Well, the skin changes, so we've got to adjust. So it's not about having somebody here every day if they're okay. It's like, how do we get them into the shower once a week, keep the integrity of the skin, keep the integrity, like, the body clean? Like, how do we navigate this? And so it's just fascinating to have conversations with families because care is so dynamic and needs are so dynamic and generations are so dynamic. And, you know, you always hear the boomer millennial conversation. It's like, well, you know, like, go talk to the silent generation. Go really sit down with somebody and hear, like, what they're looking for. And 99% of the time, most people just want to age with dignity.
Yeah.
They don't want to lose themselves. They don't want somebody taking something away. And so our ethos has always been, you know, we're here to help you age with dignity. We want to keep you safe and comfortable wherever you call home. We're not going to take something away from you that's going to keep your strength up. We're going to be there to support you to make sure that all the things get done.
Oh, that's so awesome. And the reason that I love my job is because every day is something different, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a repetitive job. What you are explaining is also nowhere near a repetitive job. No. Like, how do you really enjoy the fact that, like, every case is different? Like, everybody's an individual. Everybody needs a very particular care plan and all of that. Like, does that feed you in some way of, like, being yes. able to solve these issues?
Yes. So a little bit of backstory about our agency. So my sister and her husband started our agency here in Half Moon Bay 13 years ago, 2012. Like, it's we're coming up, I guess, on 14 years, actually, 2012. And so what was always interesting to me is I would hear these stories from my sister, and, you know, she's living here in Half Moon Bay. I'm living in Pennsylvania, working in New York City. And there was such a disconnect between the two until mm-hmm. my dad started having his issues. I almost just said falling apart. He never fell apart. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to rewrite that whole story in my brain. But and so I would hear these stories about, you know, just like this experience out here of aging with grace and dignity. And then I watched my parents and I was like, wow, this isn't happening in this corner of the world. You know, like, if, unless you had 12 cousins to come, because that was, again, farming community, much like Half Moon Bay, but much smaller scale, lots more livestock.
More rural.
Way rural. It's like the rural 1% of Pennsylvania. Like, they did a survey and limited resources, but huge families and generational. And then here come my two parents that randomly bought a house in this town because they just loved the mountains that were there. And it was like on the way up to Canada where our family was. And so, you know, the isolation piece, like, really stuck out to me mm-hmm. listening to my sister here. And so, you know, went through the whole thing with my dad, and then my sister wanted to move up. We share the same dad. She has we have different moms. And so she wanted to go home and be able to take care of her mom. And so the opportunity to come out here presented itself. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. Like, I love this. And you're right. Every single day is different. Now that I own the business, I bought this a couple of years ago from them. If I could do, like, an ideal day would be just out and about and talking to my seniors and visiting and checking in, doing home assessments, helping support families. And 90% of the work that I do is that. I'm very lucky. But it's just a complicated situation. And I have been told that I spend too much time with families up front, and I disagree.
Which, yeah, that feels like a lame...
I disagree.
Yeah.
And I'm not the person, like, I will sit with you for an hour and walk you through every single resource that I have or point you in the right direction, whether you hire me or not. Mm. Only because I wish somebody had done that for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think sometimes it's such an emotional experience and nobody understands until they're in it, that having somebody that you can talk to. I've been called a therapist. Most people hug me. Like, I mean, I have, you know, I really do build rapport with families, because I just think it's important. Sometimes we need to slow down when things are moving super fast.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like that would be a really, that's a really great asset in something that is very, very easily overwhelming.
Totally.
'Cause trying to figure out how to, especially when you're the child and you're trying to figure this out about your parents, right? It's like, that's such a deep emotional relationship, and you know, everybody has their own relationship with their parents. Yeah. And you know, some are great and some are not so hot, and you know, whatever the case may be, and they're thrown into this situation where they now have to take care of their parent similar to how they would take care of their child. And to have somebody be able to come in and kind of do their best to ease the overwhelm and make it very palatable and more of a step-by-step, instead of like, I just imagine the kind of, you know, Peanuts character Pigpen. It's like when you're in the middle of it, you're yeah. just covered in all of this swirl of things that have to happen, and paperwork and food and the like all of these different aspects. And I think our lives are so much busier today than I think they've ever been in the past, right? Like, there's yeah. so much more that each one of us individual humans just has to deal with on a day-to-day basis, that it's very easy to just take things on as another task I have to do. And to be able to have a resource like you and Home Helpers to come in and try to take something that can be so depleting without you even realizing that it's being depleting is so valuable. And people hopefully just need to know that that's out there and it's very accessible.
Yeah. Well, I think to that point, a lot of what people don't understand is that you're grieving. As soon as stuff starts, so when you have a baby, you have hope. They throw up, you're like, oh, I can't wait to, like, want to change a dirty diaper? Yeah, sure, I'll do it, because there's hope for the future. And when you have a senior, a parent, and you're watching this happen, you know, they're losing their mind, they're losing their facilities, they've had a fall, then they have multiple falls, then, you know, it sort of snowballs pretty quickly. And you have a parent or a senior who, and I hear this all the time from my seniors, but I can shower myself, but it's not safe. And then yeah. they get nervous. And so then there is this piece of like grieving who you were, grieving the possibility of like future family vacations and what that could look like. There's the weight of healing if there is some sort of medical emergency, whether it's a fall diagnosis, something, you know, just a sickness. Cancer's been popping up a lot in my world recently, which is actually new for us. A lot of what the work is, I mean, it flip-flops. Like during COVID season, we get COVID. Dementia, Parkinson's are big ones for us. Falls. Mm-hmm. We come in after people have had multiple falls to keep people safe. And so I just think that the grieving piece is a bigger piece, and it causes a lot of burnout. Because you don't know. I can only speak from my own personal experience. I took care of my dad for 5 years, and my dad passed away like right at the beginning of COVID. My mom and I have talked about this. I am not exaggerating. And I don't know if it's the weight of the pandemic or just the weight of everything that happened in the 5 years that I took care of him. It took me two full years to get back to like a baseline normal mm-hmm. after he passed, because I was just so tired. I had insomnia. I had lots of different things going on in my personal life, and it was just exhausting and grieving on top of it. Mm-hmm. So, but I grieved for him while he was still alive.
And I think it's also for a lot of people, without maybe even consciously thinking about it, it is a glimpse at mortality.
Yes.
And
you're confronted every day
with both your parent or loved one's mortality, and then realizing like you have a mortality. Like, it's just so many feelings that come as like a big ball and smack you right in the face. And then on top of your normal day-to-day life, and like as you mentioned, you were working essentially two full-time jobs. Taking care of your parents was a full-time job, and then you also had to make money because unfortunately it takes money to do anything.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and it just becomes this double whammy that sometimes you can feel like you're drowning. And if I'd had kids on top of it, like I honestly, I bow down to, because, you know, I think what's the statistic, like 60% of the caregiving falls on women in families. And so even that, like, I can't imagine. I mean, that's why I made the choice, and or the choice was made for me just by my decisions. But yeah, it's like, it's so overwhelming. It can be so overwhelming just how much people have to deal with.
Yeah.
And the cost of it, like, on families. And it tears families apart. Like, that's another conversation for another day. But, yeah, it can really tear families apart that it's not being equal, and it's, you know.
Especially, yeah, when multiple siblings.
Yeah.
And there's one that's kind of either a natural fit, but maybe doesn't have the time or wherewithal to be the one, or... Yeah. Or they do it because nobody else is stepping up, and then they get really resentful. Mm-hmm. And this is all stuff that we will dive back into after our break. When we get back, give us a call.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side. 100.9 Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
Hi, this is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me and Stan Warren Luttrell coming up at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. We'll have a look at today in history, plus we'll get to a brand new forgotten find. It all happens at 10 a.m. right here from 100.9 FM KHMB.
And we're back. If you would like to call in and have any questions or stories, about senior care or anything like that, please feel free to give us a call, 650-477-1244. And we're back with Betsy from Home Helpers in Home Care San Mateo County. And we were talking about the kind of more emotional, overwhelming toll of trying to live your life and try to do right by your family and your parents and take care of them. And I will say that, just diving back into the siblings thing, that is one thing that, and again, apparently my family is very,
organized
and miraculous, because a similar thing happened on my dad's side of the family, in that when his, when my dad's parents, were, you know, getting elder and passing, and I don't know on their end if it was a prior conversation and it was set up, or if it just happened of its own accord, but my dad and his brother, similar to my mom and her siblings, like, they had pieces of the puzzle that they were very uniquely qualified for, and they just divided and conquered. Like, I am very lucky that I have no family members on my mom or dad's side that argued well, everything was happening, nor after. Everybody has a very strong relationship. Communication was, like, top priority. Nobody was taken by surprise. There was a lot of giving. I think when people had a piece of the pie that they were dealing with, and they had every opportunity to do with it, you know, do with what they will with, you know, whether it was money or property or anything like that, the things that, you know, kind of happen after the fact, like, everybody was very making sure it was fair and equitable. So I know that we were very lucky and that happened, but I also do think that, especially on my mom's side of the family, because my grandparents were so insistent on having these things organized ahead of time, and that it made it easier for the siblings, their kids, but it also modeled it for us grandkids.
Yes.
So since I saw that as the norm on both sides of my family, I feel very prepared that should my parents need me and we have to have these conversations, they are not awkward conversations. They're not confrontational conversations. Ooh, that was too many words. I'm only halfway through my coffee. But I think because they've already been through that on the one side, that now as the next generation after that, again, what was modeled for me felt very good. And I hope that as this generation of the world, whether it's us, which is Gen X, or if it's millennial or Gen Z or whoever, that these conversations become more normal.
Yeah.
And the thought of planning becomes more normal. Do you see a difference in, like, and I know it's kind of hard, you're only, I think you've owned the business for roughly two and a half years.
Yeah.
So that's not the hugest runway to have this comparison, but does it feel like people are starting to really take note that these are things that have to be talked about ahead of time or are better if they're...
I think... I have lots of thoughts. I think that the conversation around aging in America has changed. I think you see a lot more larger scale publications, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, The Atlantic, writing these large articles now about dementia, Parkinson's. Dementia is on the rise. Parkinson's is on the rise. The people that are writing these articles are part of the sandwich generation. So they're seeing that, you know, one in four people in their 40s have a parent that's aging and a child that they're taking care of at the same time. So I think in terms of like media and exposure, I do think the conversation has changed. I think COVID changed the conversations that we were having. Mm-hmm. People who knew people that were in facilities during COVID really shout from the rooftops how terrible it was for their loved one. Mm-hmm. My dad, just a short snippet, mm-hmm. my dad, you know, he had Alzheimer's. He had a fall about in February, end of February in 2020. And part of what happened with our family was he was in and out of a skilled nursing facility and lockdown started. And I'm so grateful. Like, it was a week before the official lockdown happened. My dad was in a skilled nursing facility. I have incredible siblings. All of them happened to live in Canada at the time. And the borders got locked down. So we had like 20 minutes with my dad before my brother and sister had to get in a car and drive back up before the border closed. And my dad, the deterioration in that one weekend in a skilled nursing facility without his family, without, because he couldn't remember how to open his cell phone. Mm. Like, it was just like one mm-hmm. of those. And then he got brought back to the hospital because of complications. And we ended up getting him home on hospice the day that it closed. But like, I was able to be in the hospital with him. And so I think, you know, stories like that that have come out of COVID have changed the way we look at it and the exposure, because the senior community, in my opinion, got ravaged unfairly mm-hmm. during COVID with families not being able to go in. And I have a lot of clients that, you know, have dementia, have Alzheimer's, and families are saying, you know, it's been 5 years and we're finally starting to undo the damage that was done when they were isolated during COVID, because connection is just so, loneliness is such an epidemic.
Which I think is often brought up, how the lockdown affected everybody. I think there's a big emphasis on how it affected the kids that couldn't go to school and socialize and stuff. But to your point, I don't know how much of the actual conversation has been until now has been about how it had affected seniors.
Well, and seniors are people who are active on, like, I love my seniors. My seniors know more about TikTok and Instagram than I do. Like, I'm not even kidding. Yeah. But they're not posting.
Right.
Right. So they're consuming the content, but they're not really posting. And so I think families that there are starting to be more influencers that are putting content out that makes it more relatable for, you know, the sandwich generation, for millennials, Gen X, Gen Z. I think the conversation is going to continue to change. The piece that we all have to remember as children, and I will say this, and I will die on this hill if I have to, is we still have to respect our parents. We have to respect their wishes. And so, you know, if you're getting a lot of pushback from your family, your loved one, like, that is their right. Hmm. They did not get to 80, 90 years old.
They earned it.
To be told, we're sending somebody in and they're going to put you in the shower. Like, that is just cruel to me. And so this piece of learning how to have harder conversations, knowing what to do in a situation, knowing when to call in help, I think those are the more interesting conversations. How to get somebody into a skilled nursing facility? How do we bridge the gap? Because that's the other thing. Like, skilled nursing facilities are acute facilities that you go to when you go into the hospital and you're not ready to come home. So they're supposed mm-hmm. to act as a bridge. Mm-hmm. It's different from assisted living. It's different from, it's a form of short-term assisted living. Mm. You know, you talk about like, oh, I'm going to put my parents in a home. Well, what kind of home are you going to put them in? Mm. Are you going to put them in independent living where they've got like a community and they can do stuff? Is it assisted living because they need help with medications? Is it memory care? Mm. Memory care is a big thing with dementia and Alzheimer's on the rise, but there's not enough beds for all of these things. Mm-hmm. And so how do you bridge the gap? You bridge the gap with a caregiver like my agency can provide. Again, we do non-medical things, but I mean, people always ask, like, what do? We don't just sit and talk to somebody, because 9 times out of 10, our clients don't want somebody to just sit and talk to them. Our caregivers are not there to be entertained, but we're helping them get in and out of the shower. We're helping them to get dressed. We're doing meals. You know, if necessary, if there's a special diet, we'll take care of that. Ambulation is a big one. Like, if somebody's afraid to go out of their house mm-hmm. because they're afraid to go walking by themselves, mm-hmm. that's where a caregiver is beneficial. They can help them stand up, sit down properly. And so, you know, when you really start thinking about all of that, you know, it makes it less scary, in my opinion, because just because you can't get in the shower doesn't mean you need to move into a home, mm-hmm. right? You're nervous yeah. to be in the shower by yourself. You don't need to be in a home. You can be at home and have somebody help you. And if you don't want your children to do it, then there is somebody that's trained that can do it.
Just hitting on a home piece, which is, this is a separate topic, but it's all, now that I am getting older and I have become more aware of accessibility and what that means to make something accessible and this and that, the number of homes that are built that are not accessible and senior friendly is, and it's wild that we've ended up in this place where it's like, a part of the reason why something, it might be hard for somebody to shower, is because the shower at their home
has steps going down into it.
Yes, which actually is, I have that at my apartment, and literally every morning I'm like, one of these days I'm gonna slide out and hit my head on this ledge. So just a little plug out there, if you are remodeling your home and it's your forever home, or you're building a home and it's your forever home, you know, make some considerations. There are some beautiful things that they can do with homes. Still, you know, it doesn't deteriorate your options of having a beautiful home, but kind of think about, you know, what is this bathtub, you know, or shower, or whether we have stairs or not, or whether we put in an elevator, whatever the case may be. Think of your future self, if this is your forever home, about what it's going to look like when mobility is a problem.
Yeah.
When you need a walker, or just getting around is, you know, your feet don't lift up quite as high.
Yeah. I am very lucky. I have been into a lot of homes on the coastside. And I have to say, especially up in El Granada, not so much in Half Moon Bay, but El Granada, because it's on the hill, Montero is the same way. There's some of the most beautiful homes and families that have lived there for 40 years. And I remember one home that I was in, it had like five stories, five floors.
Oh my gosh.
and from the garage at the bottom, and it, you know, like build up and gorgeous views, but the kitchen and the bedroom were on the top floor and the dining room was on the second, and then there's a third, and then, you know, the guest bedroom and laundry was at the bottom in the garage. And I remember having a conversation with the family, and the woman was like, I bought this house when I was in my 30s. Mm-hmm. I've lived here, you know, 45 years. I had kids. We ran up and down. Nobody thought anything of this. And she's like, I feel like a prisoner in my house now. And, you know, you sit there and you're like, we're not fools to dream big in our 30s and 40s. We are not, it is not childish. It is not something that I would ever say to anybody, like, don't have fun with what you have. Like, have fun, enjoy it. But when those things happen, when the things change, you have to be prepared to adjust. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because when I moved into my current house, I purposely got a house that is one story. Like, it's hysterical. Like, I have a walk-in shower for my mom because my mom spends 6 months of the year with me now, and there's no stairs. And my mom actually made the comment the last time she was out. She's like, why didn't you get a house with stairs? Like, I need stairs for my mobility. And I was like, yeah, because I was just picturing, like, something's happening. You're going to have to get a hip done, and I'm going to need to have the space. And I was making it easy for me. And of course, we love my house. But, like, at the same time, it's, my mom was the one like, you should have stairs in your house at your age. Like, don't age yourself because you know what's going to happen. Like, don't get stuck in like the next step, but be present and mindful enough that you can make a change when you need to. Mm. And I think that was like, my mom has given me some real pearls of wisdom on aging with dignity and what it means and like when children should push and not push. I mean, she has been in many ways like my greatest teacher. Mm. But yeah, it has not always been an easy road either. So,
well, I will note to Mama Milne that there are all kinds of stairs around this coast.
Yes, there are. And she gets winded when she does them. So we love her. Yeah.
Oh, that's love Mama Milne. Getting into some of the dynamics of these conversations. I do want to note one thing, which is slightly off topic, but still related to home helpers, which I found very surprising when we met, is that you can also help people who are not necessarily seniors, but have had maybe like a surgery or, you know, something that's just very kind of temporary. And
I almost hired a caregiver last year for myself.
Yep.
Because we are non-medical, so our agency, so there are different types of caregivers in California, and I'm not going to say that caregiving is cheap on any level, unfortunately. You know, there's different things. The county has IHSS, which does, they have caregivers that are paid by Medicare, Medi-Cal. I'm so confused because I'm from the East Coast. Sometimes I always forget which one it gets paid by. You know, there's private caregivers that, you know, kind of like care.com you can go to, you can research, find caregivers, and then there's an agency like mine. So because we are an agency, that means we are overseen by the Department of Social Services. We are licensed. We are licensed, bonded, and insured, which means I have all the liability and workers' comp responsibilities. So if somebody hires us, my caregivers have been thoroughly background checked. We do federal and state background checks. They do mandated state training every year. We have additional training that we provide. And so, again, there's different levels. Private caregivers, some of them work for agencies, and then they do it on the side. Some are just, you know, family caregivers. And so I think, you know, when you talk about, oh my God, I just totally spaced. What was the question again?
That you don't have to be a senior.
Oh, yes. You don't have to be a senior. So the beauty of what we do is that we can provide short-term care, and we can provide skilled short-term care. So if you're having surgery and, you know, they don't let you, even for a colonoscopy, they don't let you go in and then just get in an Uber.
Yeah.
You have to have somebody with you. And so for us, what we do is we do like post-surgical care. So think about it. You get your knee done. You're not getting up to go to the bathroom that quick. Mm-hmm. A caregiver is going to help you with the bathing, the showering. The number one thing, anyone tells me they're getting a knee done or a hip done, like get the Hyper Ice machine. But you need help with that, right? Because if you're in the chair and you're, you know, you're swollen and you're sore, even though the doctor's like, yeah, you're going to be up and walking before we let you go home, the reality of it is 24 hours at home by yourself, like, somebody needs to do some of the prep. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to change the sheets. Somebody needs to throw in a load of laundry for you. Somebody can take the dishes out. And yeah, then you can focus on walking and rehabilitation at home. So we do support families. We do support clients that are getting knee surgery, back surgery, because there's no bending, lifting, or twisting after. That's always, you're healthy, but you gotta, it like, sucks. We do hip surgery. We've done post-surgical, like, cancer surgery if there's, like, a tumor being removed. We do the support after. And 9 times out of 10, people, families are calling us because the main caregiver, the one that is with the person 24 hours a day, we're taking 4 hours off their plate. They still have the other 20. Mm-hmm. So we try to balance the difference between the two. We also have had a couple of clients in the last couple of years, actually quite a few of them, that are doing, like, it's long COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So younger clients, but longer healing process. And so we help manage energy. We help, we're not really, like, managing the household, I wouldn't say, but giving them the break that they need so mm-hmm. they can be moms and yeah. they can be husbands and wives. And, you know, that's been very interesting to watch. And so, yeah, I think when you, like, I almost hired a caregiver last year because I was going through, I had a stomach infection and it just wasn't healing. And I was like, there were days where I was in bed and, you know, trying to run a business. I'm like, I need someone to make my meals for me. I need somebody to drive me to the doctor. I don't have the energy. And, you know, thankfully I had you actually outing you on the radio. Crystalline drove me to all my appointments, but you know, there was a moment when I was really, really sick where I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to hire a caregiver because it would just actually make my life easier. Mm-hmm. And I was, there were days where I was really weak and I was afraid to get in the shower by myself. Like, mm-hmm. and I, you know, then my mom came out too. She took care of me, but, you know, I didn't want to ask my mom to take care of me. Like, who wants to do that? Nobody. So I get it when people are like, I don't need help. Of course, we want to believe that we are strong, but sometimes it's important.
Yeah, and asking for help is not weakness, which is a whole other therapy type
yes.
conversation and situation. But, and again, I'm just going to harken back to my grandparents and being modeled this. I have no, it's so funny. I don't want to ask for help when it comes to, like, very normal, like, day-to-day things. Like, people will, hey, Crystal, you're doing this very, like, you know, random project. Do you need any help? And I'm like, no, I could do it by myself. But when it comes to health stuff, because of what I saw through my family, I feel like I don't. Now, thankfully, I have not ever had major medical thing as long as I stay away from shellfish. But I hope, like, I hope that I have thought about it enough that I wouldn't, that I am ready and prepared to ask for help when it's needed. I do love being the person who gets to take my friends to the doctor and be there for them and sit in the room and make them giggle when things are feeling really serious.
But you've been in the room now enough to know, and imagine this if you were doing it for, like, your parent
yeah.
or, you know, an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent. You've been in the room enough to know that it is not straightforward in the medical system anymore.
Oh, gosh, no.
And so I think that's another thing that families are dealing with that they don't think about. It's like when you're managing all the appointments, all the care, all the post follow-up, you've got doctors that are telling you different things that are contradicting what the doctor earlier in the day was saying. I mean, there's so much to navigate in the medical space that takes up brain power and resources. And then add to that things like ChatGPT and Claude, social media telling you something else. And the noise right now in the world is just deafening. Mm. And my business is a people business. And I say this all the time. If you've ever met with me, I will say this. And again, it's like one of those hills I will die on. This is a people business. Not every person is going to be a match. I'm not a match for every person. I don't expect every person that I have a conversation with to need my help. But I do believe that that connection is the piece that will get you through. And nobody does this, caring for a loved one, aging gracefully, aging with dignity. Nobody does it in a vacuum. Nobody does it alone.
And actually, bringing it back, and I hope it's okay that I talk about this.
Yeah.
About the medical piece and how it is helpful to have, like, your trusted people. Sources group think. As somebody who has been on the receiving end of hearing what you hear from the doctors when you had your stomach issues, like, you're so right. It's, depending on who you see, it's such conflicting information. And one that stood out to me, and I was so glad I was in the room, which I just think is hysterical because it was about some allergies. So they needed to assess some allergies. And Betsy had told this doctor that she had a long time allergy. Like, she knows when she eats this thing, her whole system goes completely bonkers and that she is allergic to it. It's been a thing for years. And because this particular allergy doctor had not really heard of that as being a common allergy.
It's apples, by the way.
Okay, I don't know.
It's fine.
don't bring Betsy apple pie. This doctor could not. It was so apparent in the way he was questioning her. And as if she doesn't know her own situation. And finally, as the person in the room, I just told the dude, she's allergic to apples. We know she's allergic to apples. Please just stop talking about this and move on.
And well, he was trying to catch me up. So he would be like, so no apple
Fritos,
no apple juice, no apple cider, no apple. And I was like, yep, yep. And then he would repeat things. And that's when Crystalyn lost it. She's like, he's like, well, what do you do at like Thanksgiving and Christmas? And I was like, well, I can cut them. It's just when I eat them, I get like hivey and splotchy. And it just was like one of those things where I was like, yes, I like legitimately, he goes, so know this. And I'm like, and I get where he was coming from. I think it's like training the brain to see, is this psychosomatic? Is this something else because of everything else that was going on at the time? And I was like, you know, it's just, I get bright red. So there are no apples. And
yeah,
I read every label because I'm also like you with shellfish. I'm deathly allergic to coconut. So I've been doing this for 20 years. Like, it's not, I just don't eat dessert out.
But
sad but true.
And this was something just like an allergy. Like, I couldn't imagine having such intense conversations with, you know, doctors where you're feeling like you're getting conflicting information about something more serious like cancer or dementia or Parkinson's or any of the diagnoses that are absolutely life-changing and life-altering. And so I think that's another thing that having people in the know of different common types of situations is really, really helpful, because on top of the care that you provide, you can also be a sounding board.
Yes.
And not that you're going to necessarily, like, as you've said, you're non-medical. So you're not going to give medical advice.
No.
But just being able to listen and...
We can bring... So what we do is we bridge the gap.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, like what happened with my family, I hear this all the time from other families, what you're talking about. There's a coldness to diagnosis. And there's a... And it makes sense. Doctors have two... General practitioners now, I think I recently read, have like 2,000 patients each in Kaiser. Like 2,000 patients that they are overseeing. You're not going to get that 2.5-hour conversation that where they're going to walk you through next steps, what to do, things like that. Social workers are fantastic. They also have lots on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
We, again...
Oh, wait. Shock and awe. Everybody today is overloaded?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, and we are so lucky here in the Coastside because we have senior Coastsiders, because we have adult day. We have home helpers on the coast. I know there's other agencies that also serve the coast. Like, we're very lucky, our community, that we have such a great network for seniors. But again, we can always do better. Mm-hmm. And I think just, you know, asking an audience to make space for the seniors in your life feels like a big ask. But it's also just like, smile. Like, so many times, like, just make a connection with a senior as you're walking out of New Leaf, as you're going into Starbucks. Like, a smile goes 1,000 miles for somebody that hasn't seen a smile all day. Or, like, just say hi to people. Like, I think that makes such a big difference. And, again, not everybody needs somebody in their home, but, again, it's listening, it's connecting, it's just being there.
And I'm going to apologize to Sandy Winter if I'm getting this incorrect, who is the most wonderful, beautiful human being who is the CEO of Senior Co-Siders. But I feel like I've been in a number of meetings where Sandy has mentioned, like, the senior population is growing.
Every
it is
day.
Not shrinking. Like, we are living longer.
Yep.
Then every generation is living longer than the generation before it. And if I understand this correctly, also the younger generations are getting, the birth rate is dropping. So it's getting slimmer and slimmer.
Yes.
So, you know, as time goes on, we're inching towards being a elder world where...
Well, so I have one stat, and I know that we're almost done, so I'm just going to throw this out there and just, we'll drop the firebomb at the end. So I was reading this morning, more than 7 million Americans are 65 plus right now in the United States living with Alzheimer's.
Oh, holy.
Wait for it. And that's the most common form of dementia. There's multiple types, and they're actually diagnosing more, which is fantastic, more resources. But that number is projected to nearly double to about 13 million by 2050.
Holy.
Over 65 with dementia. That's the CDC's number. So this is not, we're all going to have more experience with this as we get older. For sure.
Before we close out, if anybody is interested in talking with you at Home Helpers, because any of this conversation resonated with them, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, we have an office here in town. It's just off Main Street on Miramontes. But you can go to our website, www.homehelpershomecare.com. It's /San Mateo. Or you can give our office a call, which is 650-532-3122.
Thank you for being here, Betsy. And we appreciate this candid conversation. And we will be back next week, full-fledged. Ruben will be here. And we hope you have a wonderful weekend and week ahead. Thank you, Cosine.